Welcome on Altitox Academy's podcast. Learning more about today's science with Jeanne Laperouse and her guests. Have a good listening.
Welcome to this new episode of Altitox Academy podcast. I'm today with Arti Aluwaya from the 3R Centers in Italy. Arti, thank you for being with us. Today, we are going to talk about the application of the directive in Italy to protect animals in science, but also about the mission of the 3R Center in Italy. Arti, the center in Italy, the Centro 3R, was created in 2017. Can you explain the creation of the center?
Yes. The Centro 3R, that's how you say in Italian, is the inter-university center for the promotion of the principles of the 3Rs in teaching and research. And it's a center that is an inter-university, and therefore there are a number of universities that participate. At the moment, we're almost eight to nine universities joining. Every couple of months we have a new member. And the aim, as it says in the title, is to try and promote the 3R principles within Italian universities, both as far as teaching the principles to students is concerned, making sure that during our teaching, we are making our students aware of what it means. So what refinement, reduction and replacement actually means, and how to apply it in their daily, daily life when they go out and work. And then also trying to push this in terms of the research that we do. So both in basic research, which is obviously a large part of what universities do, as well as applied research. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we include all the 3Rs. So, we're addressing people who work with in vitro methods, and we're also addressing people who work with in vivo methods, trying to make them more aware of techniques to reduce and refine the types of experiments that they do. What else can I add to that? So, yeah, our vision is to really try to make people, not just university lecturers and students, but also the public, aware that the application of the 3Rs is actually equivalent to good research, to responsible research. So I like the way I like to put it is to say that it's not just the 3Rs of reduction, refinement and replacement, but also rigorous, responsible and reproducible research. So, the other 3Rs that we've got to take into account, which is actually just the application of those basic principles. So yeah, responsible research is basically 3Rs research.
And in Italy, what are the main fields of research where we use animals? What are the sectors of industry too where we use the most animals?
Well, in Italy, obviously, a lot of basic research, at least at the universities and at the research institutes, things like using the animals as a model to try and understand better how the human brain works, using animals as a model to look at systemic diseases and try and understand some of the mechanisms like behind metabolic diseases or immune and autoimmune diseases. And obviously, we have regulatory research as far as testing of drugs or chemical compounds is concerned. That is more done on the in industry rather than at university. So, mm-hmm. We basically deal very much with basic research, and that's what we've been trying to address. So, the idea of being inclusive means that, we have members who come from the departments of veterinary science, departments of medicine, zoology, biology. The idea being to try to make sure that everybody comes under the umbrella of the 3Rs, not just people who are developing in vitro models or microfluidic systems.
The Italian 3R Center is made of university. What are your source of funding? Is that an initiative by the university? Do you have help from other stakeholders in the field?
Okay, so it's not actually financed directly by the ministry or of health or of research, and we don't have non-university stakeholders. So the little funding that we get, apart from the donation from Alt Talks, from which we're very grateful, mm-hmm. is from our universities. So each of the universities will fund, not specifically, but will fund events, or, for example, my university has financed the website as well as the first Congress that we had. And the next Congress is being funded by the university that's holding it. So we don't actually have a specific source of funding, although obviously, we do try and participate in projects and in proposals and other activities that that embrace the 3 R's. So yeah, to answer your question, we don't have any specific funding from the government or from our universities dedicated to the center. But they have been very supportive of any initiative that we have, that we put forward.
You just mentioned a Congress. It will take place in autumn. Can you tell us more about it?
So we're having an event from the 30th of September to the 1st of October. So it's a 2-day event. Unfortunately, it's going to be online. So it means that we can't be, face to face with our students and with our members and with members of the public. But because it's online, it means that, we can capture a large audience, and a large audience will be able to participate. The event's basically dedicated to young people, so we're trying to promote and encourage young people to submit abstracts. There's going to be a competition for the best posters and abstracts on specific subjects, and the prizes will be various items that have been donated by companies, and it's also an opportunity for us to disseminate our results and disseminate some of the activities that we're doing within the Centro Traer. And I have to say, one of the activities that has been most rewarding and that we've really, really encouraged is that of creating new courses dedicated to the 3 R's. So all of the universities have really embraced the idea. So they've started including in their curricula specific credits dedicated to the legislation, to the good practice in implementation of reduction, refinement and replacement, open debate as well, pro, for and against, just trying to open up society and the people to this aspect of responsible research being equivalent to the 3 R's, without kind of, specifying that you mustn't do animal research or you must do animal research. But whatever you do it within the framework of the legislation and, with the idea of humane and responsible research. Each of the universities has actually started putting up at least one or two courses at the graduate level or at PhD level in various forms. So either in terms of credits or selectives or absolutely new and obligatory courses.
What is the legislative framework in Italy? The directive was transposed in the legislation in Italy in 2014. It was one of the latest member states to transpose it, and even the Commission has to ask the court in beginning of 2014 because the transposition was delayed. What happened in Italy around this the transposition of the directive?
Yeah, so the subject of animal testing is very, very hotly debated in Italy, and it still is. And not just society is very divided on the for and the against, but even scientists themselves, there are many, many scientists who cannot conceive of a world without animal experiments in this country. And there are a number of scientists who, you know, working really hard to promote non-animal methods. So it's one of the reasons why we established the Centro Treer, just to give a balance to this outlook. So, you know, it's neither animals can never be replaced because we'll never find an adequate substitute, or, you know, like animal testing is completely useless and inefficacious. Really, what we need to work towards is a future in which I do think we can eliminate much of what we do with animals as imposed by the directive. So the directive actually does say that the final goal is to replace animals when it's scientifically possible. So that definitely is the direction that I'm trying to give to the, you know, to the center and to the advice that we give. But at the same time, it's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. You know, we've got to work towards it. And really, I think that the only way we can achieve this goal in the long term, I don't know when, 10, 20 years, I don't know, is to start looking at humans, human data, human tissues, biopsies, resections, and even, you know, cadavers, human data. Data is so important, you know, all the data that we have from millions of people. So really the substitution will come, the replacement, I mean, in Italian you say sostituto, but the replacement will come when we're able to replace this with human data and human tissues, human in silico models. So yeah, I'm deviating. As I was saying, the subject's very hotly debated. So in fact, it took a long time for this country to establish a legislative framework to embrace the EU directive. And it was indeed the one of the last countries to take it up. And it's still really hotly debated. As you may know, or listeners may know, the law is still very, very debated, very much debated, because while it was being established, I'm not sure why, because I wasn't involved in writing the laws, there were two clauses that had been added, and one was a ban on xenotransplants, and the other was a ban on the use of animals for testing drugs of abuse. And, you know, they were just put there. They weren't part of the directive.
Can you explain what are, I mean, the drug of abuse? I mean, we can imagine that it's testing addictions, for instance. But xenotransplantation, can you explain what it is for the people who don't know?
Yeah, sure. Sorry. Xenotransplants means transplanting organs from one animal to another. So, you know, you might want to try and understand the mechanisms of immune rejection of organs when they're transplanted. So you may want to, for example, transplant a liver from a pig to a sheep, or a baboon to a macaque, or something like that. And that kind of research has been or was initially proposed as banned in this directive, sorry, in this law. And the other ban that was placed in the law was using animals to test drugs of abuse, which means using animals to test, for example, narcotics, or even things like coffee or alcohol. So, you know, trying to understand what happens when this type of product is used on an animal, to try to then understand how you can treat humans for their addiction, or so on and so forth. And so the first when the law first came out, these two articles were basically suspended, so they weren't implemented. And then almost every year since 2014, or every couple of years, the groups who are very against animal testing, so the so-called anti-vivisectionists or and so on, would like this part of the law to be implemented, whereas other groups, for example, a lot of scientists who work on drugs of abuse or who are working on humanized models, for example, mice that have some of their proteins altered so that they resemble human proteins, and so they are they're not subject to rejection. That kind of research could potentially be banned by this this article. And so they want the law, they want these two articles to be suspended. So since 2014, it's been regularly, these two articles have been regularly suspended. And so every couple of years, the debate opens up in society, in the public, and between scientists and between different groups. And really, we don't seem to be coming to the end of it. But personally, I think that these two articles should not have been there. To be quite honest, they weren't part of the directive, and they weren't really very well defined. So it wasn't defined what a drug of abuse is. So it basically precludes the use of the use of animals to test certain drugs of abuse that are potential painkillers. So it might be used for, therapy for reduction of pain, or for so I think, either these drugs of abuse need to be properly defined as drugs of abuse, and drugs that are used as a pastime rather than for therapeutical purposes, rather than as medicinals. Well, in that case, if the law had been very clear that if the research is for looking at drugs that are used specifically for their abuse and are used by the public for this kind of application, then you can't test on animals. But if it's being used as a medicinal, so as a in a pharmaceutical context, then obviously you have to do research on animals because it's part of the law. So it needed to be better set out, not just one line saying no drugs of abuse. So that, on the one hand, I think either needs to be rewritten or eliminated. And the other one also, on xenotransplants, I think even that could have been better defined, because as it is, it precludes testing humanized animals, doing research on genetically modified animals with the aim of creating a new source of organs for transplant. So, if it had been better defined, it would have been all right. But just two lines, I think, have created a lot of controversy and wasted a lot of time as well.
And what are the other requirements of the directive that were transposed in the Italian law? What were the other changes that the directive created in Italy?
Like in every country, we set up animal welfare bodies, so local animal welfare bodies, and then a system whereby each time somebody wants to conduct an experiment, it has to go through these welfare bodies, who then look at the criteria and application of the 3 R's. And then when it's approved by the local body, then it goes to a national body who looks again at the proposal, looks at whether the number of animals being used are not too many, and whether the principles of reduction are being used, whether there are other alternatives that could be used as well, and in which case the proposal is rejected. And so that kind of thing has been put into motion at a local as well as national level. Apart from that, it actually has been quite difficult to implement the 3 R's in terms of making sure that the idea is properly disseminated to everybody. So there I find that there are a lot of, there's a lot of misinformation. The public, for instance, doesn't know that we apply the 3 R's when we do our research, or at least we try to. And a lot of researchers don't really understand the law. They don't know very much about, its ins and outs. So there is a lot of ignorance in the public, I think.
And what do you think should be, what are the areas of improvement within the directive or in the Italian law at this stage to move forward to the 3 R's?
Well, at the end of the day, replacing animals in biomedical science is enshrined in the legislation, it's enshrined in the directive. And really, it's just part of the inevitable progress of science, going towards better models and more predictive results, more accurate results as well. And the only way we can do that is to replace animals and start using humans. The example I like to give is that of insulin, which was discovered in dogs at the beginning of the last century. And then it was produced in pigs and in cows, and used to treat diabetes in humans. But nowadays, almost all the insulin that is given to diabetic patients is derived from genetically engineered bacteria, and it's humanized insulin, so it's actually much better than the insulin that was derived from animals. So we've moved from animals to a completely reliable and better replacement.
I think a lot of definitions need to be properly, properly put down. There's a lot of phrases, both in the Italian law as well as in the directive itself. For instance, one of the things that I think really needs to be defined properly, especially at this stage that we are, where the technology is advanced to a certain point, we need to define what scientifically possible means. So, the directive says that the objective is to replace animal testing as soon as it's scientifically possible. So, I think we need to now start thinking about what scientifically possible means, and changing regulatory law to ensure that scientifically possible, even in terms of replacements and alternatives, are properly defined. It's always very difficult to get an alternative method to be approved. Whereas, as we all know, animal tests have never had to pass any regulatory phases. So that's one thing that I think we need to really seriously start thinking about. And then the other definition that perhaps needs to be rethought is the definition of sentient. So, mm-hmm. How do we properly define what the ability to feel pain is, and trying to properly define intensity and amplitude of pain, so that kind of thing. But certainly the definitions in both Italian as well as EU directives.
Can you elaborate a bit more on the non-sentient and sentient organism?
Okay, so sentient basically means the ability to feel. And in the directive, we're talking about the ability of an animal to feel pain. And so in this directive, it refers to all vertebrate animals, but it also includes cephalopods, which are things like animals like octopuses, etc. And so they're included in this scope of the directive, as well as all fetal forms of mammals. But there are other forms that are not included, for example, the well-known zebrafish, because mm-hmm. we're not able to tell if they are, they might be fetuses or not, but we're not able to tell if they feel pain or not. Not included are, for example, eggs of birds, because they're not fetal forms of mammals, they're fetal forms of birds. So in that sense, we need to really look at what the panorama of different types of animals we use are, and, you know, try to better define the entity of pain. And there is a lot of recent literature on this, so I think that aspect could be revised, you know, recent literature which is able to show that, for example, the chicks in eggs while they're hatching may feel pain, and certain fetal forms of non-mammals, non-mammalian fetal forms are also able to feel pain, like zebrafish embryos and so on. So that needs to be better defined in the light of the you know, the research that we have now done since 2010. So in the past 20 years, we've come a long way in with the science and technology of being able to define and quantify pain, and also being able to say what is scientifically possible and what's not scientifically possible in the near future.
Yeah, how do we know whether something is feasible or not? Is that because it is reproducible or accurate? When is a method accepted and validated?
Well, that's the thing, right? There isn't even a definition from the regulatory bodies of what acceptable means, you know, how many tests you have to do, how reproducible it has to be. And then again, you know, we know quite well that a lot of times the animal tests are not reproducible at all. So, you know, one animal test in the laboratory will have a result that's completely different from a different laboratory, because it'll depend on the handler of the animal, the conditions that it's brought up in. So, you know, a lot of work needs to be done on the so-called reproducibility crisis that we're facing at the moment, both in animals and in, I have to say, and in vitro models, because we know that even, you know, some of the latest techniques that are coming out, like organoids and spheroids and assembloid cultures, are very, very irreproducible, just because the organoids are so sensitive to their microenvironmental conditions. So, you know, a little change in growth factor will bring out a huge change in the response of an organoid. And obviously we don't really understand how close these systems are to humans. So we've got a long way to go in that sense as well, which is why I think, you know, we're talking about 20, 30, maybe more years before we can really seriously think about replacement, scientifically possible replacement. But I do think we're in a position to be able to define it probably now.
Thank you very much, Artie. I think, well, we went through a lot of different topics that affect the situation in Italy and also in Europe. Thank you, Artie. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot for the opportunity. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you wish to learn more about the 3R centers and the alternatives to animal testing, check out our website, academy.altatox.be. You enjoyed this podcast? Please leave a review on Facebook and other social media.